Tandela and Public Enemy, Sleep Quelle and The Perceptionist. Start this journey on Tuesday, June 7th on the Red X Show from 6 to 8 p.m. Continuing Wednesday night on Self-Defense 101 from 9 to midnight. Wrapping up Thursday night starting at 11 p.m. Hip-hop history. Learn it, live it, love it.
You must learn!
June 7 and 9 on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org.
Thank you. coming up next on Free Radio, it is the June 2nd, 2005 edition of Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides, local and out-of-town news and commentary with special call-in guests. We hope Dave Meserve, Arcata City Council member, and Pebbles Trippett, medical marijuana activist from Ukiah. Stay tuned.
In 1649, to St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste grounds grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder they took the land. Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command. They make the laws to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor men starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the lords. We are free men, though we are poor. You diggers all stand up for glory, stand up now. Men of property, the orders came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim, tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down.
And welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Free Radio Santa Cruz you're listening to here at 101.1 FM, also www.freakradio.org. This is a Sil Wright show you're listening to, called Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, and I am the robe. You are the listeners, but you can also be the speakers. If you want to call in, the call-in number is 427-3772. If you're out of the area code is 831. 831-427-3772. You can also go on to the chat room at www.pagesincolor.com. And that's a way to get on the air if you haven't got a phone and you have a computer, an unlikely circumstance. But if you happen to hear a busy signal and you want to say something or make a comment, I will put you on the air. I'm already actually going to the chat room myself, even as I speak. And actually have an operational computer in the studio, or operational internet, actually. Even better, or just as good, just as necessary. So, hey, so chat room is available. Phone lines are open. And we're expecting a call here, that is to say, hoping to have a call from Dave Meserve of Arcata. He's off to the Homeless Task Force, a group meeting up in Northern California, in that small town up north, which we've been following somewhat in recent shows. They've been struggling with the same kinds of problems Santa Cruz has in some respects, the problems of prejudice, bigotry, gentrification, misconduct by police agencies. The paranoid drug war, of course, the war in Iraq, which is eating up people and funds and corrupting and corroding our political scene. And indeed, Dave Meserve has been interesting well, that's just interesting. He's been instrumental in putting forward resolutions at the city council level that have at least a symbolic impact, if nothing else. They've not only opposed the Patriot Act up there, the law, that the national law that essentially gives very extensive police powers to federal agencies in pursuit of terrorists. That sounds like an incoming call. So maybe that's him. Who knows? Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi, Robert. It's Dave Meserve.
Hey, just talking about you, Dave.
Uh-oh, my ears were burning.
Well, and hopefully everybody else's too. You, of course, are an Arcata council member since how long?
Since 2002, November.
And if you were to chronicle your achievements, what would you say, what would you put in your top five or ten, just off the cuff?
Just off the cuff.
How's that for a quickie for you?
How's that for a quickie? Well, let's see. Real simple, non-political ones, getting solar panels on City Hall, passing resolutions to impeach George W. Bush, Rumsfeld, and Cheney, passing a resolution calling for the immediate withdrawal of troops from Iraq and Afghanistan, working hard to establish the Homeless Services Task Force, and watching that work through its process, which has been both painful and invigorating. And, the most recent resolution, I guess, which was a municipal response to federal lawlessness. A combination of resolutions about national issues and everything from fixing the streets to trying to get more sustainable transportation to trying to work out social issues to trying to keep the police in check. How about that?
That sounds like a mouthful. You're on your way to a homeless services task force meeting now.
Right, it's starting at 7 o'clock.
I kind of dissed your homeless task force last time I spoke on the air without knowing a lot about it, suggesting that when the issues last fall were a campground, police misconduct, civil rights for everyone, including poor people, instead of addressing those issues with any kind of directness, the city council instead is funding or suggesting that, I guess, Humboldt State University consultants be funded, maybe throwing money at the Arcata Endeavor, instead of addressing the issues and really expanding shelter and dealing with civil rights issues. What's your response to that critique?
Well, in order to do anything like move the Endeavor, expand its services, find a new location, incorporate a campground or some kind of emergency housing, we need money. The city of Arcata has no money, certainly in its general fund or really anywhere else, to provide homeless services or to build a new building. But we do have available to us CDBG, community development block grants, and home grants from the and those can be in the order of $500,000 to $1 million and actually get something built. The prerequisite for that is to have a homeless services plan. In order to have a homeless services plan, had we done nothing and allowed our staff to take care of it, the staff would have put out a request for proposals, and various consulting firms, probably in Phoenix and L.A. and who knows where, would have sent in proposals, and one of them would have got the $35,000 and would have changed the name on their boilerplate from the last city they did to Arcata and given us a plan. We thought it was more appropriate to do it here locally. The most obvious choice to actually carry out and be the recipient of the money for the plan and to actually write it was Humboldt State University. And then it appeared to me and Paul Patino, another council member, that the best way to get community input would be to establish a task force which had representatives from all different portions of the community on it.
Well, so, you're talking again about getting money from home and the HUD grants, right? Or
right.
CDBG grants, anyway.
Right.
Have you researched whether that can be done to get a campground? Or are we talking about yet another building for essentially a very small minority of homeless people instead of something that might serve the majority of people who are outside?
No, those funds could be for any sort of facility. They could purchase the land, obviously a campground doesn't take very much in terms of development. And so they could be for the land, and they could be for whatever building of, kitchen, dining room, offices, common room that we can include
right.
within our plan.
The budget situation is always is of course what the conservative forces, and I guess maybe all forces around the city council, particularly the city staff, also start ranting about here in Santa Cruz. Our city manager is babbling about cutbacks, but the police department never seems to get cut back, and the services for businesses don't seem to get cut back. Instead, it's social services, oversight for the police, and so forth. What is the budget of Arcata? And I mean, is there a... I've considered alternatives down here, like taxes on land, land speculation. Is there some way of actually generating more funding locally through taxing, frankly, the rich? Is that a possibility in Arcata, or are there no rich people up there?
No, there are certainly wealthy people, but when they... what we're... In terms of the general fund budget, which is about $7 million in Arcata, that runs our basic services. We do not have the ability, really, to fund ongoing services for the homeless out of that fund. That's normally done at the county level, but I believe that it is the city's responsibility to take care of our homeless. But the way we need to do that is through the granting that we can do to get something built, and then hopefully the Arcata Service Center, the Arcata Endeavor, the Arcata House, the Night Shelter will probably join together in some sort of super board and be able to continue to obtain the funding they're obtaining, which is currently being used mostly for feeding people and also for transitional housing.
Are homeless people clamoring for services, or are they clamoring to be left alone by the police department and not harassed for essentially trying to survive themselves? What is the real public input you're getting on this?
Well, come on, Robert. Are housed people clamoring to end the war in Iraq? Some of them, as you well know. The homeless are as diverse a population as the rest of us.
What about the homeless members of the homeless task force? What are they saying? Are they saying
members of the homeless task force, I think we actually did some disservice by choosing both Tad and Kim Starr for the task force, because they are both activists who are certainly, both of them, if they wanted to be off the streets, and to a great extent, they are off the streets. They've established a very, good routine of life and seem to be doing quite well in it. But if they wanted to be housed, they could be housed. And we do need representation on the task force of those who have, hit hard times and would love to get out of it, as well as those who have chosen a freer lifestyle than perhaps you and I have chosen, and not through any great tragedy in their lives, but because that's the lifestyle they've chosen.
Well, are you suggesting that Tad and Kim and perhaps others are not really representative of the sentiments of homeless people? Or
yes, I am suggesting that.
Okay, so you've been getting folks been coming to city council and saying, these are our real concerns. We don't really care so much about civil rights or liberties. Our major concern are not necessarily specifically that, but we want you to, put your money into moving the Arcata Endeavor and put all your money into getting a grant there. I'm focusing on this issue because it was discussed last time by Kim and has been discussed in emails by Tad. But it's kind of representative of what it happens in different communities. There is a sort of a social service focus, rather than a focus on the issues of civil liberties. And perhaps that's representative of what homeless people are really concerned about up there. Would you say that's true? Have people been coming to your office and saying that to you?
But they are two separate issues. In other words, it doesn't cost us anything to try to rein in the police from inappropriate behavior.
Well, you need an ombudsperson, perhaps, or some body.
Well, yeah, and we're working on that, or a police review board within the limitations of being a general law city.
Mm-hmm.
And there are limitations there, but there are at least two and probably three council members who are going to make sure that we see the most that we can have in terms of review of our police behavior. We've had a very disturbing incident recently with a taser that was used totally, as we understand it, unnecessarily. And there's, of course, the question whether there is any necessary use for a taser. But and certainly there are, you know, I believe firmly, one of the things that got me into politics in the first place was fighting against the no-sitting ordinance here in Arcata in 1999.
How successful has that been? Let me just jump in
the
and ask you.
The no-sitting ordinance?
Yeah. I mean, how successful has your fight been?
It's rarely actually used. It's more of a, you know, a something that the police can latch onto if they want to get someone who's seen on the sidewalk and also happens to look scruffy.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely has been often applied along with profiling. Mm-hmm. We've got serious issues in terms of the way the police behave, and it's very hard to you know, to pin those down and to find actual incidents. This last tasing incident is probably a clear enough incident that we're actually going to see some action on it, but I wouldn't say that for sure until the report's out, and that's going to be probably 30 days from now.
So you're off to this homeless, I'm sorry to leap ahead, but I'm trying to kind of jump ahead of you because of the time situation. I know you're limited for time. This homeless task force meeting is going to be on around what topics? What's coming up this evening?
Well, let's see. On the agenda specifically, I have it here in front of me, subcommittee reports, and probably this is the most effective area that the task force has been able to work in, is it's broken down into subcommittees of site evaluation, need assessments, public forums, community impact, and services. And, you know, breaking down into smaller groups, they've been able to actually make some progress in focusing on what they, you know, on what they are going to be recommending. Now, I'm sure that most of the recommendations we end up getting from the task force are going to be represented by a majority recommendation and a minority recommendation, because we're not going to get consensus from this group, and to be quite frank, I never expected that we would.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very diverse group, and but what we are going to get is a flavor, I think, of what overall, I think that the task force does represent fairly well the community of Arcata. And so I think what they recommend is going to give us some idea as a council of what we're going to be able to accomplish. Now, there are a couple, certainly the council is free to do whatever it wants with the recommendations from the task force. And if the task force doesn't go far enough in providing certain services, then the council may go farther than that.
What's the situation on the council? I'd heard that there had been kind of a progressive sweep in November, followed by a kind of a conservative backlash in the special election in the spring?
That would probably be accurate. Certainly on the homeless issue, I'd say we're doing much better than we were a year ago or a year and a half, a year ago.
But still no campground and no check on the police department?
No. Check on the police department? No, we don't have it in place.
Uh-huh.
But I think that we probably... Check on the police department. We're definitely going to have something in effect within this year. It's on our council goals, and I know at least three council members, including myself, are dedicated to see it happening.
Is there much of a backlash from the conservative staff here in Santa Cruz? We have what we call City Manager for Life, Dick Wilson, who is paid more than any other city official, who's been in power since 1984, and who, along with the staff, in my view, run the city. Do you have a similar situation in Arcata where conservative staff pretty much run the city?
Our city manager has come out with some what I believe to be inappropriate statements about the homeless, and he is retiring in April of next year.
Uh-huh.
So we will. That's one of the things we're going to be doing in the next few months, is choosing a new city manager. And certainly one of the questions we're going to be asking is both his or her personal opinions on this matter, and also his or her willingness to separate their personal opinions from the will of the council.
You're also, of course, noted, at least in my book, for several attempts, two of them successful so far, maybe more, to rein in the illegal, at least to challenge the illegal war in Iraq. with at least a kind of statement by the Arcata City Council, which and where people, I guess, are more liberal on national issues, or I don't know, they got their heads screwed on the right in the right direction, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, that was even more true of the last council, where we could easily pass a peace resolution, but I was not permitted to put homeless issues on the agenda.
Whereas now
I mean, the really, Robert, the accomplishment that I feel we've made in the past 6 months here is that we now have an active dialogue going on in the community about homeless issues. Before this time, before this six-month period, there was people were walking around with blinders on going, there are no poor people, there are no poor people. And, you know, this is not a problem. Well, it is a problem. It's really the most difficult issue we have facing us as a city. And finally, whether we're getting to a conclusion or whether we're getting exactly where I would like to be or certain other members of the council would like to be, there is a dialogue going on, and people in the community are being brought into that dialogue, whether they like it or not, and being required to kind of take a stand on where they are on it.
And this is being exemplified by, you're going to a meeting tonight, but are these meetings widely publicized?
The meetings are widely publicized. The whole process is widely publicized. I mean, this community is engaged in examining what to do about not only, you know, the civil rights infringements of having no, you know, no legal place to camp and it being illegal to camp anywhere in the city, and balancing those with what the housed residents feel is having their commons claimed by people who somehow infringe upon their rights to enjoy the commons.
Is it true that the after initially allowing some videoing at the first few meetings of this homeless task force, there was a blacking out of video and audio for the next 4 or 5 months?
No, there's been a...
good, glad to hear it.
The city has not been videotaping it, but a community member has been videotaping it, and as of last week, that videotape was being shown on the public access TV channel, not live, but during the week.
And that was happening regularly?
That is happening regularly. A woman named Aura is... filming it regularly.
Have you received any has there been any impact on the merchant community or on police department behavior because of the ongoing discussions in this group or in the subcommittees of this group?
You know, I think we're in the middle of the process right now, and we're going to reach a period in about August when we're going to get the reports, and we're, as a council, we're going to be required to respond to it with actual actions.
Right, but I'm talking about the actual merchant community and the police department. Have their activities, as far as you can tell by anecdotal reports or by your own observation, has that changed as a consequence of the dialogue, or is there any, do you see any impact so far?
Only that people are thinking about it, and people who are engaged in the process. You know, some of these public forums, maybe for the first time in their lives, they've actually sat down at a table with a few homeless people and had a conversation with them and realized, gee, these people know how to put words together and they have real ideas. And, gee, I can, you know, understand some of their feelings. I mean, and that's really where it is. That's really what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain level is... people realizing other people's humanity, and people stop being, you know, rich bitches who won't give me a dime, or they stop being scruffy
bums and drunks.
Scruffy bums, yeah. And when that stops, that's when you start to be able to get to solutions.
Well, you know, I mean,
and I'm not predicting any.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to solve the homeless problem here in Arcata, and all that I hope for out of this whole process is some sort of awareness in the community among individuals of what, you know, the elements of the problem are and the humanity of everybody involved, and that, you know, 2 years from now, things will be better than they are now in a number of ways.
Well, in the last couple of years, you've had, like last year and the year before, people like Tad and others engaged in public protests, came to city council, mass campouts and demonstrations. I know what happened in 1999 when the Homeless Issues Task Force formed in Santa Cruz as a substitute for meaningful city council action to change onerous laws like our sleeping ban law here. The activists were essentially funneled into this subcommittee group Their activism essentially was diverted, and what you had instead was a series of, you know, good recommendations came out of this that were completely ignored by our city council. I'm just wondering, has the level of activism dropped in Arcata as a consequence of this homeless issues stuff? I mean, are people still protesting? I heard it mentioned, I guess, by both you and Kim Starr, this issue about the tasering, which was witnessed by numerous middle-class people, a police officer tasering a man walking across the street who simply decided he didn't want to respond to a police department request to talk. Was that what your understanding of the issue was?
Well, that's certainly, you know, I actually have an employee who witnessed it, and that was fairly much the story he told me. You know, on my other life, I'm a building contractor, so I have it from someone who is neither an activist nor particularly a homeless advocate that, you know, there was a definite problem with that, with what happened there, and that is being investigated, and I'm following up on that. You know,
have any city employees violated the city law which fines you for following the Patriot Act, if I understand that, your ordinance
no,
correctly?
No, there has been no attempt by the federal government to do anything here that is related to the Patriot Act.
Any what's happening around the feds and, how would you put it, recruiting on campus, on local high school campuses?
One of the things that our most recent resolution, the municipal response to federal lawlessness, is we're going to have an ongoing peace commission, and one of its charges is to limit the access of recruiters to high school and college campuses and to work with school boards and the university to do that. And what form that will take, I don't know. But to me, that's one of the very essential issues that we need. You know, it's kind of where the rubber hits the road in terms of where the direct impact on our families and on our lives of this war comes home, and far more personally than it does monetarily. You know, certainly there's the monetary effect, but when we have our high school students being actively recruited to join up and perhaps go fight in an illegal and immoral war, then it's time to really take action. And I think that's something that the community is ready to respond to.
Remind us what happened on, I guess, May 4th when you mentioned, I guess we talked to you earlier about the resolution, which passed City Council after, I guess, several months of discussion and town hall debate.
Well, yeah, we did pass this municipal response to federal lawlessness by a 3-2 vote. And establishes our Nuclear Weapons Free Zone Commission. It extends their mandate as a peace commission, and the city council is charged with doing anything within its power to influence the federal government to immediately end the war in Iraq. And the peace commission is charged both with getting information to returning soldiers from combat about services that may be available to them, and also getting information to any soldiers who may refuse to serve about what their legal options are and providing them with access to free legal counsel.
You haven't sent over a delegation to make contact with the insurgents yet, I take it?
No, we're not supporting the insurgency either. You know, we do agree with them that the United States and Britain and all other foreigners should immediately leave Iraq, and if any force is in there, it ought to be a truly international force with Arab leadership.
Any other cities adopted this policy, as far as you know?
As far as I know, no. Gary, Indiana passed something calling for the immediate withdrawal of troops, and as you know, Vermont, in their town hall meetings, called for a review of the use of the National Guard in illegal wars. And we've already called for the withdrawal of all troops back last July. And so, you know, my hopes that this would kind of catch on in cities and that other cities would be taking action of this sort so far have not panned out. But I certainly would encourage Santa Cruz and San Francisco and, you know, Portland and other possibly like-minded cities to take up these issues.
How about the drug war, the war that's put 750,000 people in jail or cited for use of marijuana this year? Up in Humboldt, of course, marijuana is a big cash crop. Any chance of a tax and regulate resolution such as Oakland passed?
Yes, there's an individual who's been talking to me and other council members about working on something like that. It would be conditional on the, because of the state law being in effect, anything we pass would be conditional on the state law changing, but it would set up the infrastructure for that in advance of the state law changing. Perhaps.
In Santa Cruz, we have a situation where a liberal city council supposedly champions one of the organizations locally that's fighting the feds, the WAM organization. And there's a decision due this week, Raich versus Ashcroft, a very important decision coming down as to whether medical marijuana distributors are going to be able to continue to distribute and care providers to provide without federal interference. But here, likewise, or I should say strangely, in Santa Cruz, there is no and has been no legal distribution center for 5 years because of city zoning policies that have essentially zoned out medical clubs. What's the situation up in Arcata?
I believe there is a medical dispensary here, but I am not really familiar with how it is. I can't really answer that accurately right now.
Okay.
What I'm looking at here is something like what Oakland did to make it the last priority of our police department to enforce laws against the personal use of marijuana.
Talking with Dave Meserve, Arcata City Councilman, who's on his way to a homeless task force meeting at 7. What about rent control? Any rumblings of that up there in Arcata?
There certainly have been rumblings of it. Whether we can, again, there are a number of things that have come up recently which would require us to be a charter city rather than a general law city. And one of the things I'm looking at as a long-term goal is that we may want to become a charter city. And that gives us more freedom on the style of voting that we have on police review boards and many other issues. It gives us more latitude to act, outside of state laws and general laws for cities.
There was some claim down here that Santa Cruz could not pass a law that would penalize employees for restricting the rights of their citizens or betraying them in the Patriot Act situation because of the fact that we are a charter city, whereas you are not. Do you know anything about that kind of distinction?
Haven't heard that one, no.
Interesting.
I've been looking at being a charter law city because of the independence it would provide from state law. Because in the long run, I'm looking at many of these cities, like Santa Cruz and like many North Coast cities, I think would do very well to become as independent as possible, both from the state of California and from the federal government.
Any issues that affect poor and homeless people that you think should be addressed that I've not covered that you either aren't addressing and you would like to, or that you have addressed or you're trying to address and we haven't gotten into them?
I think you've led me over a rocky and broad path, Robert, this evening.
Indeed, yeah.
And, it's the one thing I think you realize after 2.5 or 3 years in public office is that your dreams going in are all possible, and they are things that one can accomplish in public office, but it takes a lot longer and a lot more work than one might have foreseen when running for office and proclaiming all the great things that one would do.
Are you on speaking terms with Tad these days?
Yes.
So when you see him, tell him that we're looking to hear from him down at Free Radio. We're getting everybody but him, so ask him if he can to give us a call.
I sure will. I mean, he and I, we love each other dearly, and we often get to yelling at each other, and then we talk kindly the next time we see each other.
Well, light up a doobie for me. When
you do. I think that's always a good way to make peace. So.
Hey. Talking with Dave Meserve. Thanks, Dave. Anything else you want to say?
No, I appreciate the breadth of your questions, and the only thing that's a little frustrating is the brevity of my answers, because these are all very complicated issues, and they do all interlock, but, trying to bring peace and justice to a world where it's sadly lacking both locally and globally is a huge project. And I just, you know, my hope is that more and more people get involved in these issues and get involved in local politics so that we, you know, that working, it's not the only way to work through local government, but it is one way that we can work. And the more people with, you know, level heads and also the ability to dream who get in there, the more we can accomplish. So get involved, people.
Hey. Thank you, David.
Okay. Thank you very much, Robert.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Dave Meserve. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. We're also on the chat room at pagesandcolor.com. And the call-in number is 831-427-3772. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Should be getting a call shortly from Pebbles Trippett, who is a longtime, fearless, methodical medical marijuana activist who's been to jail for other lengthy periods of time in the 90s. I think it was the 90s, might have even been the late 80s, for struggling for basic constitutional rights. I worked with her in San Francisco for a little while, and then back in the early 80s. And she's been working around issues in Ukiah, and I should say Fort Bragg as well, around the issue of with the Medical Marijuana Patients Union, the MMPU. She's written some articles for the Anderson Valley Advertiser, which is where I saw her stuff recently. And hopefully she'll be calling in, if not tonight, and she was going to call in a little earlier, but Dave Meserve here, I let him take a little bit of her time. She will be calling in at 10 o'clock on Sunday. This show comes back 9:30 to 1, I should say continues, 9:30 to 1 on Sunday mornings. So if you want to listen into that, you can. And while you're pondering all this, here's a little something from the early Mama Cass. In anticipation of Uncle Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs, which goes from 8 to, it's either 10 or 11, I'm never sure which.
Shut your eyes while mother sings of the wonderful sights that
And that was Mama Cass from The Big Three, which was the group she was with, or one of the groups she was with before she joined the Mamas and the Papas. I have a few more songs throughout this next hour and 15 minutes. And hopefully we'll get in touch also with Pebbles Trippett. Looking over the Sentinel today, or the urinal as I call it, there's a couple things happening. Some of them are also advertised, or I should say announced, on Indie Media, www.santacruz.indiemedia.org, which I regularly encourage people to read. Students organize concert to voice angst over Iraq war. Students at Aptos High School are making their voices heard about their displeasure with the war in Iraq. The school's Peace Club is joining with other peace and justice groups in Santa Cruz to present Rock for Justice, student-produced benefit concert at the Vets Hall in Santa Cruz. That's Friday, 6:30 to 11, according to the Sentinel. Day, that's tomorrow. $5 donation or $2 with two children's books. Proceeds from Friday's event will assist Aptos High in the creation of a campus peace garden dedicated to county residents who've been killed in the war or in traffic accidents. Peace Club President Megan Hunt, 16, said the event will provide a forum for young people to express themselves in many ways about the war. Sometimes you get a feeling of being hopeless in the face of death and destruction, Hunt said. This event will give people the chance to meet others who are working toward the same goal. Felicia Van Stolk, 16, vice president, said she hopes young people who attend the event will realize they can do something about change. Friday's event will include performances by high school bands, poetry readings, guest speakers such as, get this, everybody, Santa Cruz Mayor Mike Rotkin. So here's an actual public event he's going to have to show his puss at. And if you want to show your puss and you can see each other, that's one place to go. Anti-war activists and local veterans, including Aptos High School English teacher Stephen Baer. This is more than a teen dance, said Baer, who serves as the club's advisors. Kids are bewildered about war. It's implied if you don't back it, you're being unpatriotic. Teens are concerned about military recruitment on campus and the possibility of a military draft. And the article goes on. If you want to get in touch with Soraya Gutierrez, she's at S. Gutierrez, Santa Cruz Sentinel. She wrote the article. If you want to check it out, Harbor High, Soquel High, St. Francis High, Santa Cruz High, and Renaissance High are helping produce the event, which is being sponsored by Bill Motto, Post 58888, Veterans Foreign Wars, VFW. So check that out, 6:30 on Friday tomorrow night down at the Vets Hall, and see what you think. Well, let's see what we got here. Looking on the chat room, we'll hope to see some chatter. You can go there at www.pagesincolor. On the Iraq scene, I was sort of wandering through the internet, although a key computer crashed today. I hope to have it back in operation pretty soon. I was able to get to Juan Cole's website, which is where I'm heading now, to read you some of his most recent stuff. Juan Cole is an instructor. Let's see. Well, he's a professor of history at the University of Michigan, and he does a daily extensive website on Iraq, which I find very interesting. He has not favored a U.S. withdrawal from Iraq until, I guess, the government there calls for it, or until at least certain figures who are powerful locally, I guess, such as Sistani, the Shia leader, calls for it. So I certainly disagree with him there, but he has a lot of interesting and detailed information, and he links it up with a lot of news stories, which I find worth checking at. But if you look at www.juancole, juancole.com, as I am, you'll find some stuff. Thursday, June 2nd, 9 dead in Tuz Kermatu bombing. Deputy governor of Diyala assassinated in Baghdad. And poisoned watermelons. Iraq looked more and more like a macabre horror film on Wednesday as the Iraqi military announced that someone distributed poisoned watermelon to its troops at a Mosul checkpoint, killing one and making 12 others ill. This, according to Deutsche Presse Agentur, via Asharak al-Satat, that's another news service, I guess. Likewise, three children were blown to smithereens in a mortar strike while playing in their yard. Guerrillas launched a rash of car bombings Thursday morning. At Bakba, at least four are dead, including the deputy governor of Diyala province. In the city of Tuzkarmatu, a bomb killed nine Iraqis and wounded 28. In Kirkuk, a car bombing killed two and wounded several others. On Wednesday, AP reports a suicide bomber detonated his payload at the main checkpoint for Baghdad International Airport around 9 a.m. on Wednesday, leaving 15 Iraqis wounded and black smoke rising into the sky. A mortar strike in southern Baghdad killed three children and their uncle. Guerrillas killed two policemen in west Baghdad in a drive-by shooting. Carol J. Williams of the L.A. Times argues that the suicide bombings in Iraq are on a scale unprecedented in world history. She writes, U.S. officials and Iraqi analysts say the insurgents' resources are increasing on several fronts. Money to buy cars and explosives, expertise in wiring car and human bombs, and intelligence leaks that help the insurgents target U.S. and Iraqi forces. There is no shortage of volunteers for the fatal missions. There is some evidence of Iraqis undertaking suicide missions as well as foreign jihadis, and she cites such an anecdote. The British military in southern Iraq is making plans to withdraw to bases and ultimately to depart the country. They hope to turn security over to Iraqi police and other security forces. The Financial Times is too genteel to say so. This is all Juan Cole speaking, but he backs it up with stories. The British military planning to leave, for example, is a story which he is quoting from the Financial Times. UK plans South Iraq security handover in months. That's a, I think that's a London financial newspaper. And he summarizes, the Financial Times is too genteel to say so, but for all practical purposes, most security in southern Iraq has for some time been provided by the Badr Corps, the Dawa Party paramilitary, and the Sadrists of various stripes, i.e. by religious party militias. The British have long since acquiesced in this situation, and their just announced plans simply underline that acquiescence. Given that they have had on the order of 10,000 troops in southern Iraq, and that the southern port city of Basra alone has a population of 1.3 million, they could hardly do otherwise. Reuters reports that a recent spate of assassinations in Kirkuk are raising ethnic tensions in that powder keg of the city. The article says that leaders from all three of the city's major ethnic groups, Kurds, Arabs, and Turkmen, have recently been assassinated. An Arab tribal leader, Nayef al-Jaburi, was killed outside his home on Friday night. Jaburi's family blamed the death on fellow Sunni Arabs because of his friendly ties to rival Kurdish parties. But Mohammed Khalil, the spokesman of an Arab bloc and the local council, said the killing may have been carried out by a militia linked to one of Iraq's main Shiite parties. He said the Badr organization were opposed to Jaburi because he had ties with the People's Mujahideen, a group that wants to overthrow Iran's government. The Badr organization is linked to the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, which is a pro-Iranian group. And really interesting details about internal politics in Iraq, if you like to follow that, which I do, but I don't assume necessarily that all you folks out there do. So I'm going to suggest to you that you might want to check out Juan Cole, if you're interested, and see what you think. Normally I spend a lot of time talking about and giving you examples of stuff on the streets here in Santa Cruz. The crackdown on poor people, the legal structure that criminalizes most poor people, not that they are arrested, but they are at any point vulnerable to being harassed or arrested by police if they engage in what is a normal innocent behavior, like sitting on 95% of the downtown sidewalk. And similarly with political activists and musicians, if they have the temerity to set up a table or open up a guitar case anywhere along Soquel Avenue or along Mission, those are considered commercial districts, and you cannot have a table or an open guitar case within 10 feet of a building. Since the sidewalks are about 10 feet wide, that means, I guess, you can put your guitar case on top of a car parked next to the sidewalk if there happens to be parking spaces available and you happen to have a friendly relations with somebody owning a car. It's It's a bizarre situation. Of course, obviously, city council members will tell you, no, we're a very liberal town. We don't enforce those kinds of laws. Only if there's a problem, if there's a complaint, we leave that to the police. And I've mentioned before that leaving such things to the police is, of course, acquiescing in a police state. So that's kind of what we're stuck with. Here's a little bit from the streets, and I'll be back. Again, if you'd like to call in, the phone number here is 427-3772.
So it's about 4:20 on the 17th of May, 2005. Current borders on a somewhat overcast, windy day. Talking with
Digger.
Digger, you got a sign here that says, trying to get to San Diego. Anything helps. God bless. How's it going? Are you able to? Have you gotten much money so far?
We got like 60 cents in like last week.
And how long have you been doing this for?
About a week.
So it's a pretty slow week.
Yeah. Considering like if you're in Portland, dude, I make like $35-$40 in like 2 hours. Here it's like, you know, maybe $5 a day, if that, and I have to eat because I'm not the place to make.
And are you outside or inside?
Outside.
So you got a companion with you. What's your name?
Southern.
And Southern, how long have you guys been traveling together?
About a month.
And where'd you guys meet?
Asylum.
And how are you treating each other?
Fine, perfect. We get along great.
What would you say about that?
He's a great young man. Regardless how old he thinks he is, he's not that old. I swear to God. I'm 19 and he's going to be 30 soon, so, yeah.
How's Santa Cruz treating the two of you?
Like crap, dude. It sucks.
And you're talking like financially or otherwise?
Everything. Like, the cops haven't really bothered us, which is kind of cool. They're kind of low key. But, like, there's no money, no, like, real feeds anywhere. There's, like, hardly any resources here, and that kind of sucks. And the resources that they do have are, like, really spread out, so it's really hard to find them. And the people here don't know directions. And so we've pretty much been walking in circles for the last week trying to find places.
How about the people on the street? How are they?
Some of them are okay, but, like, I've gotten two arguments yesterday because I was just standing there smoking a cigarette and some guy's, like, yelling and screaming at me. I'm like, dude, I can't help that I'm homeless, you know? And he's, like, going off with my friend Lito, and I just got pissed off and walked away from him. Yeah.
Any words for Free Radio folks out there generally from either of you that you want to say?
Don't
get stuck in Santa Cruz, ever.
It's really hard. You won't have very good luck here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Wild again in father was a man like that before they had the war. Oh. Mommy, 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 please tell me if you can. Why can't it be the way it was before the war began? Come away, Melinda.
And that was Come Away, Melinda, haunting song. Put me in mind of an article I read earlier today by Jonathan Schell in The Nation, and I was trying to pull it up online. Unfortunately, I could not do that. It's you have to subscribe to get it, and I actually had a copy of The Nation, but I don't think I have it with me, so I'm not going to be able to do that. It's called Letter from Ground Zero, Revolution in American Nuclear Policy, and talks about the preemptive first strike policy that has been put in place in the last few years, and some rather alarming detail. Actually, the detail is chilling, but something I guess that those of us who want to master what's going on should pay attention to, and maybe I'll bring it in on Sunday and read it. In the meantime, if you want, you can check out The Nation and the library, which is covered there. It's in the June 13th issue. And the comment is, again, it's a story, Letter from Ground Zero. It begins, a metaphorical nuclear option. The cutoff of debate in the Senate on judicial nominees has just been defused, but a literal nuclear option called Global Strike has been created in its place, and a shocking innovation in American nuclear policy recently disclosed in the Washington Post by military analyst William Arkin. The administration has created and placed on continuous high alert a force whereby the president can launch a pinpoint strike, including a nuclear strike, anywhere on Earth with a few hours' notice. The strike, the senatorial nuclear option, was covered extensively. That's the filibuster debate. But somehow this actual nuclear option, a full-spectrum capability, in the words of the presidential order, with precision, kinetic, nuclear, and conventional, and non-kinetic elements of space and information operations, was almost entirely ignored. The order to enable the force, Arkin writes, was given by George W. Bush in January 2003. In July 2004, General Richard Myers, that's the guy who, along with Bush, dismisses Amnesty International's expose of the American gulag at Guantanamo as absurd. Richard Myers, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, stated to Admiral James Ellis, Jr., then commander of STRATCOM, "The president charged you to be ready to strike at any moment's notice in any dark corner of the world, and that's exactly what you've done." And last fall, Lieutenant General Bruce Carlson, commander of the 8th Air Force, stated, "We have the capability to plan and execute global strikes." That's Jonathan Schell's article, Letter from Ground Zero, Revolution in American Nuclear Policy. So I covered at some length Tent U. Some of you may remember. That's the UCSC week of classes at the base of the campus in a sort of makeshift series of tent structures, which invited the community to join activists and teachers and students to deal with both longstanding problems at the university in terms of labor abuses, in terms of military recruiting on campus, and in terms of how the internal organization of campus denies students their free speech rights, as well as a meaningful participation in the decision-making process there. And you may recall that on April 18th, police arrived and essentially engaged in such an infliction of pain in a series of violent arrests of peaceful people who are simply sitting down and asserting their right to publicly assemble, that it kind of provoked, I guess, not just local, but national and even international alarm. I don't know about the international alarm. I may be reaching there, but I think it certainly provoked alarm in different campuses that held sort of sympathy tent universities as a consequence of the resistance of the Santa Cruz students and the actions of the UC police. And Free Radio covered a lot of that, and I was up there covering it as well. And I helped to write part of an article for Street Spirit, the homeless newspaper, on that subject. I actually wrote a longer article that was never published, and hopefully we'll be publishing it on the Huff website, which is, for those of you who are interested in Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group that I work with, Civil Rights for Homeless People, www.huffsantacruz.org. You can check out mostly older articles, but there are a few newer articles that are creeping in on that website. Anyway, the Tent University issue came down to, the university called it the issue of camping, and that's what some detractors called it too, that the students are making a big deal over their right to put down sleeping bags at night. Why don't they just pack up and, you know, go up to the quarry, even though the quarry was being forbidden as a camping place for non-students? Why didn't they just come back the next day? Why are they making such a big deal about camping? This diverts the issue and so forth. And, of course, camping, or let's just say sleeping, the right to survive at night without being harassed by the police, is a real issue, of course, for poor people who have no place to go. And I've been talking about that issue for years, and it's also an issue for people of a liberal cast of thought or who believe in human rights for everybody and not just those who have money when they look at the Santa Cruz laws and the sleeping ban law, Municipal Code 6.36010A, which criminalizes sleeping outside or in a vehicle, even a legally parked vehicle, on all public property. And the city, which has shelter for less than 40 of its 1,500 to 2,000 homeless each night, this is, of course, criminal behavior by the authorities. It's a form of empowering the police to an extent where they become, in essence, words like stormtroopers, Gestapo comes to mind. That's not quite right because they aren't marching down the street in that particular formation, but they're given extensive powers to intervene in the lives of poor people in ways that destroy human dignity and also destroy the citizenship, the first-class citizenship of poor people. So, for example, if you're a woman, you can't sleep outside in a group. You can't sleep in a well-lighted area in a group. You can't use police services if you're with any confidence because you may have a warrant. You may be arrested. You're at higher risk for assault. There are all kinds of concerns which have been brought to the city council and Mayor Mike Rodkin's attention time and time again, not just by homeless people, but by the city's own boards and commissions, such as the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, the Homeless Issues Task Force, the Community Action Board, you name it. And to no avail. There isn't any rational discussion on the issue. And really, it's an issue of power. Until there is a sufficiently strong power in the community, a persistent power that says we will not go away until this issue is addressed, the city council will ignore the issue and the police will continue to harass people as they wish, which is what they do. That's an issue that kind of dovetailed with what the students were trying to do on campus. They weren't trying to assert the right to camp anytime, anywhere, or even that there be a change in the camping law for poor people. They were just trying to assemble at night and assert that, yes, they intended to camp overnight. They weren't actually really camping at the time. They were meeting and talking. There was no stove set up. I don't think anybody crawled into their sleeping bag. It was simply a nighttime assembly that was violently rousted by police. And here's some more discussion of what happened there the next day. Before I get into it, though, I want to say that for those who want to check out the actual reportage as it happened, both by me and by other Free Radio reporters, You can go to some of the archives of this show, which are archived at www.huffsantacruz.org, the website I mentioned before, under Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Just go to the date. I think it'll be the closest date after April 18th. Look for whatever is right after April 18th, the Thursday or Sunday show that came after that, and then I played what happened. And you also get Mayor Mike Rodkin's rather don't blame me response, which, I, interestingly enough, I got the next morning from him. There hasn't been a lot of activity on in terms of follow-up. There was a rally, rather invigorating rally a couple weeks ago, which I also covered in some detail on the show, urging the university to respond and reading the inadequate response of the chancellor to it. But, frankly, as I had feared, once the other issues began to intervene, finals, the passage of time, once the moment was lost, when the students actually had won their victory, when the community had stood up to the police and the police had to leave, there was a lot of talk about taking action later, but I don't think action was really taken. That doesn't mean that this wasn't an important point in the history of resistance to unjust authority here in Santa Cruz by students up there. It does mean, however, that in this particular time, that sort of ended that, as far as I can see. There were no new free speech zones established. There was no challenging of the police misconduct in any formal way. Police have yet to respond to my Public Records Act request on campus for a discussion of their emails and their traffic around the issue of camping, what kind of correspondence went on back and forth of public records on that, their policies and so forth, and what the higher administration ordered the police to do that night. None of this has been made public, and there hasn't been really any clear protest. Pat True's brother, actually, did a 10-day or so hunger fast and got some publicity, but disappointingly few signatures from students and faculty members urging the resignation or expulsion of the chancellor, Chancellor Denton, for being the culpable party in this police action. And one has not been willing to state that the policy should be revised and that, or promise it'll never happen again. None of that has actually happened. It's just, it's passed. And the moment of student power, where the community took back that space about midnight on April 18th, going into April 19th, has passed. And students gave up the space and then kind of gave it up for the rest of the week. They were there, but they didn't camp overnight in any numbers. And it was a tacit acknowledgement that the police, you got to do what those guys with the guns and the badges say. And that's what we usually do. I'm not suggesting that it is an easy decision to act otherwise. But when you have the power, when the power rises, I think it's important to recognize when that kind of resistance is really happening and happening effectively. So here's some tapes from that time, and perhaps if Pebbles calls in, as I hope she will, Pebbles Trippett from Ukiah, we'll hear something about the situation on medical marijuana up there. If we don't, then we'll hear some more of these reflections and interviews from April of a month or two ago. So stay with us.
Thank you. We're talking with that Cabrillo infiltrator, Mario. Hello, Mario.
Hola.
So what's happening with you, and what brings you to this depleted but still surviving Kent University that apparently intends to have a meeting, a town hall meeting on the issue of, do we flee to the quarry or stay here tonight?
Well, I just got back in here. Again, I just want to say how traumatic last night was, truly. And I was at Cabrillo all day today, telling people about it, telling my friends, telling whoever was willing to listen.
Scare him away, or will it bring him in?
I was telling about the extreme police brutality that was taking place here last night, and that everyone needs to be here to witness it. So I was trying to encourage people to come down here, and I got a good response. And overall, people were pretty enthusiastic about coming down here and actually seeing it firsthand, all the police brutality that we hear about day in and day out.
Well, we'll see if you're propaganda campaign has had some successful effect.
We'll see. You know, I think 10 universities is a brilliant idea. I also am not necessarily convinced that this is going to be the solution. And it's just, it's really hard to get people to come to these kinds of things. We're under a extreme psychological warfare these days, and we got a lot of chips stacked against us. So
there are not four armed police officers in uniform hanging out where we're standing as there were about an hour ago.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed that. I really wanted to see that. I heard...
Well, all for your own good, of course.
I don't know, man. I came with my camera this time. I was ready to take some pictures with some badge numbers and make some complaints, man.
Go, go, go.
That's the way we got to do it, you know. We got to get these complaints institutionalized. I was having some dialogue today after somebody was explaining to me. Otherwise, this history is just going to go unrecorded like so many others.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Well, it's about 6:15, and the town hall meeting, which we'll discuss... the flight to the quarry will be coming up shortly. We're talking with...
Lauren Langone.
And you are an organizer of TUSC?
I am. I've been here since we started about 2 months ago.
Wow. Well, you put in a significant commitment. What's next for TUSC?
Well, we hope to move forward with the events planned, but if the consensus is to move up to the quarry, we may end up doing that. Just have to see when
breaking rocks in the quarry?
Yeah. hopefully camping there, regaining our strength so we can come back full force tomorrow and meet any resistance that comes our way.
And you were here last night?
I was. Until about 1:30 in the morning.
And what did you observe? What did you find noteworthy aside from the stirring spectacle of men in blue engaging in training exercises on students?
I thought that overall the morale stayed pretty high, and once people were getting discouraged, it was really nice to see the solidarity from the community who are surrounding the riot cops, surrounding the students. So that was an interesting dynamic.
Did you see a lot of new faces there as the evening wore on, faces you hadn't seen before?
Yeah, it seemed like more people came down as the word got out about the police brutality.
I was impressed with that myself. What some have said that this is an issue of camping that is a distraction from the other issues involving the budget, wages... militarization of the world, but you know, specifically UCSC nuclear research, the issues that a number of people are concerned with, the more important activist response to these ongoing cankers in UCSC. Is it an issue of camping, or is it an issue of resisting universities' attempt to invade autonomous student and community space?
I think it would definitely be an issue of what we're trying to accomplish here in our political agenda, because the university administration has been very wishy-washy in their reasons for resisting. They've been giving us a lot of hypocritical answers and just very...
They gave you their answer last night, didn't they?
They did, but before that...
That wasn't very wishy-washy. That was pretty kind of draggy, I don't know what, shackly.
I'd say they were evading the real issues. They never really addressed the fact that they do allow exceptions for camping for other students.
Well, fucking do what we say or we will arrest you and harass you and beat you and scare you. Isn't that the issue?
I'd say that's the issue, yeah.
Am I putting it too baldly? Is that too hard?
I think that... That was basically their sentiment. Either do what we say or we'll call the cops on you and treat you like criminals, even though you're the ones paying for your education, supporting this university financially, and you should be allowed say in what you're doing here. I don't think it's an issue of camping.
And we're going to get back to Tent University on Sunday, that tape probably, unless something else takes its place. But right now, with me on the phone is the famous, or perhaps infamous in some quarters, Pebbles Trippett. Hey, Pebbles.
Hey, how are you doing?
Can you hear me?
Barely.
Okay, how about now?
Better.
And now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Still a little soft, actually.
Still there?
Yes, but a little louder.
Okay. How about
that's
now?
Fine.
Okay, good enough. I'm looking online. I find amicus briefs galore by you here. you've been an activist fighting against the drug prohibition war for decades, no?
Yes, actually. My first initiative was in 1972.
What was that?
I was a lowly petitioner,
uh-huh.
An activist who was, you know, very inspired by being in a room with 200 people, each of whom, you know, represented a different organization, a different constituency, a lot of debate, and it won me over forever. That was, of course, non-medical. That was what should be one's right to privacy, recreational purpose.
Right, use of marijuana for... Are you also in favor of medicalizing all drugs? I mean, do you feel that cocaine, heroin, and so forth should be available by prescription and that people should not be criminalized for using them? What's your feeling about that?
Cocaine is already available. It's in Schedule 2. Speed is already available. It's in Schedule 2. These drugs are used, however minimally, they are used and they're available. And the federal government is in the loop because there's a triplicate required. So DEA knows what the doctors are doing. If it were in Schedule 3, 4, or 5, then it's just a duplicate and it's just the practice of medicine.
Right,
but
you can still be jailed for possessing them, and generally speaking.
I think that if we were to become a wise society, we would not prohibit drugs any more than prohibition with alcohol worked.
Mm-hmm.
And we would rather, you know, introduce reasonable regulation at every level, and because it's so fraught with prejudice and misunderstanding.
You live up in what, Fort Bragg, Ukiah? Where exactly are you living?
I live on the Mendocino Coast in Elk.
Uh-huh.
South of Albion, south of Mendocino.
And you've been working with a group called the Medical Marijuana Patients Union since 2000?
Yeah, we formed a coalition, we called it at the time, but it was kind of hard to understand that for some, and so we just changed it to the Medical Marijuana Patients Union so that everyone's voice would be considered equal.
How many people would you say medically use marijuana up in, I guess, Humboldt County or Mendocino? Mendocino County, yeah.
Well, there are 1,200 people on the card rolls. The local county, which just shifted over to the state, by the way, but until last week, it had, you know, been several years of the county sheriff program.
Uh-huh.
So there's 1,200 of them. That probably means that's only 10% of the total number of medical users.
And how many people actually live in Mendocino County, do you know?
I think it's about 86,000.
Huh. Well, that's sparse counties up there.
Mm-hmm.
Sparse county, sparsely populated.
Yes, and a huge territory, and very culturally different. What's happening on the coast in general, as opposed to what's happening inland in the capital.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know here in Santa Cruz, we just talked with Dave Meserve of Humboldt County up in Arcata.
Uh-huh.
About marijuana there and how he thinks they have one dispensary in Arcata. And we actually didn't get into the subject too deeply, but I know that your group has been very active in trying to at least protect the rights of medical marijuana patients, which should have been established under Proposition 215 in 1996. Actually, it should have been established under the U.S. Constitution.
It was established by 215 there. Six rights that are now attributed to it.
Well, no, because in Raich versus Ashcroft, we may have the feds coming in to grab everything and screw everybody over.
They can't.
Well, I hope they don't.
They don't have enough resources to go after individual patients.
Right, but
no matter what's decided, that they'll be very selective about a lot of noise that they make.
I understand, but my point is that there is no established right yet with lunatic feds running around, you know, doing what they do, and not
mm-hmm.
to mention state
mm-hmm.
narcotics agents or even local busybody sheriffs
mm-hmm.
frankly, you know, however, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, we've had a situation here where you'll get Valerie Corral, who's the head of WAM, Women and Men for Medical Marijuana, praising the local sheriff,
mm-hmm.
but then the local sheriff will run in and arrest another Roger Minch here of the Hemporium,
mm-hmm.
prosecute him for a year and a half, convict him of two felonies, and it's, you know, and what is he doing? He's selling medical marijuana to people with medical marijuana cards. And it's a disgrace as far as I'm concerned. So, I mean, in spite of the propaganda, I know you had some positive words for your sheriff earlier, and I'm, mm-hmm. I'm not saying that you don't have a good relationship with him or her, and that shouldn't be, you know, an important thing to have. But frankly, as far as I'm concerned, it's none of the business of these guys with guns what people do in their private lives, particularly patients.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very, very good to be on positive terms. It shouldn't be a prerequisite, you know.
Absolutely not. The doctor and the patient are the only parts of the equation that are needed. The sheriffs and the public health departments in the counties, and sometimes in the cities, but lately usually not. They're the retrograde occurrences. In the counties, though, you know, they are some of the quickest now to jump in and say, yes, these are patients' rights. We want harmony. You know, we choose the law. We go with the California Supreme Court. Everyone is lined up behind patients' rights. And that also means caregivers' right to grow for them. And except for the cities are expressing this last gasp with prohibition.
And that's
futile prohibition.
That's actually what you've been writing about in the Anderson Valley Advertiser and elsewhere. Is there a place online? I guess people can't read your writings yet online. You may be posting them soon, though.
Yes, if we can just, you know, find someone to take over this Internet.
Well, email me your article, and I'll post it on a local website down here, and that'll happen. I notice I'm looking actually at something you've posted on the MMPU, Medical Marijuana Patients Union website, Medical Marijuana Election and Court Update, where we stand after the 2004 election, and you write medical marijuana is still a win with the voters, medical purposes passed at the ballot by over 60% in Montana, the 12th state to protect legitimate patients' cannabis use, lost in Oregon, 42-85%. Alaska lost 43-57% under a broad decriminalization plan to become the first state to allow adults to use, grow, and sell it. On the other hand, the city of Oakland passed Proposition Z, which I've talked about on the air here,
uh-huh.
the first ever voter-endorsed medical marijuana under a tax and regulate model, although I think there may have been something back in Berkeley in 1979 along those lines. But
the time was very different then. Back then, we only got about a third of the vote when we put mere recreational on the ballot.
Right, but
and that hasn't changed.
Well, the initiative in Berkeley passed by a majority, as I remember.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I think you're right in a broader sense.
Which is what we have to go for. This city by city is exhausted.
And you're struggling in, I guess, with the Ukiah City Council at the moment. Is that
yes?
Tell us about that.
The seamy side of Mendocino County politics is emerging in the cities, and the Ukiah and Willett City Councils are moving to ban backyard medical marijuana gardens and punish the qualified patients who dare to disobey the prohibition on their, you know, legal medicine.
So there have been backyard marijuana gardens for many years, presumably legally, after
yes.
Proposition 215 passed in 96. What's the reason for this sudden attack?
They say there's an urgency because of the odor, and they're putting this under attractive nuisance. The neighbors in these small cities where they live on top of each other think the aroma of the ripening marijuana attracts crime. So the argument goes, if there are no plants in the backyard, there will be no crime.
So this is odor crime.
yes. Uh-huh. Very hard to pin down and to justify in light of the acceptance of diesel and many chemical, noxious chemicals that are allowed and so on. You cannot regulate, you know, a plant aroma very easily. You could
perfume your plants.
Or grow it out of them. You know, if we should go to that much trouble to satisfy the aroma problem, one of the things they want to do is put it indoors to satisfy it. So they're you know.
Well, personally, I see that there's a color problem. I mean, why aren't the plants sort of differently colored, too? I mean, isn't that sort of, I mean, can't we get a better color here? I mean, I don't think
anything would camouflage it. In fact, it doesn't need to be camouflaged, but reducing the quantity that turns up in some of these yards, 75 plants is an example given, reducing the quantity is going to reduce the odor and it's going to reduce the
flowingness
of it all. And there are other reasons. Neighbors like
Marsha
Ward stood up at one of the meetings. And
Pebbles, have you visited any of the scenes of these odor crimes, or have you just heard about this?
There was a suit filed against Jim and Linda Matthews, two tenants who had gotten the owner's permission to grow on his property. And then the owner decided to kick them out, and he served them with eviction and then filed a suit against them despite this early agreement, and they fled with their plants in pots, humiliated,
mm-hmm.
and completely, you know, discouraged by what they'd experienced.
Right, well, that's interesting, but what I'm saying is, have you ever been to, I mean, is this a
real... Well, he lost his suit is what I was going to get to. And
right.
He went through a civil suit last week and lost it to a Mendocino jury. So this is an issue to, you know, kind of
well,
like...
Well, what was one of the claims of his suit that the smell was so bad that it made complaints from other neighbors a serious problem?
Oh, absolutely. It was the heart of the suit.
Oh, I see. Okay. And what did were you there for the...
No, I wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it was somebody who thought he could win by himself and turned away support.
So the landlord lost the suit?
No.
Oh, the landlord won the suit. Okay.
Own attorney and the two tenants who he both evicted and forced them to pull their medicine and run away.
The landlord won the suit. In other words,
the landlord lied to the jury,
uh-huh.
and won.
Uh-huh. And what
because
was
the ignorance is so pervasive.
What was the nature of the lie? What did he lie about?
That they had gone back on their word, and that they said that there wouldn't be any smell, and it turned out that there was.
Mm-hmm.
And they could have stopped that, and they used bad chemicals on the plants. And which is, according to the people who grew it, not at all. They claim they grew organic.
So now what's the story? I mean, you've been to marijuana gardens. Is it... Like, I mean, are you, you know, knocked over by the smell as you walk a block
away?
Well,
you know, I find it to be an aroma and a fragrant one at that, and it represents the eons of a positive tradition of marijuana going all the way back.
But, I mean, do any...
My side feels that it's aroma. The other side, uh-huh. some of them feel that it's noxious odor.
Uh-huh.
Even Sheriff Graber, who's supportive, was quoted as saying it was obnoxious. And others, one of our members knows someone who was sickened by it, you know, has an allergy or something like
right.
pollen.
Uh-huh.
So it isn't nothing. It is something that is far less important than the robberies and potential robberies.
Well, you know, some people have allergies to different plants. Does that mean that we should ban their growing in outside yards nearby? I mean, some people have serious allergies. And
no, it means that these prohibitionists are irrational.
Right, and that's my point.
And they think that we aren't paying attention and that they can get away with this.
Well,
we have to prove them otherwise.
Apparently there's been a dispute recently. You've been successful kind of at the planning commission level, at the county level, but you've been kind of there was a quick sneak attack done by the
mm-hmm.
city council. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, the city council did not like the planning commission's turning an alternative ordinance opportunity over to us, the patient advocate groups. They thought, no, we don't want to wait for 6 weeks for this alternative.
This is Ukiah we're talking about, right?
Ukiah
right.
is just going to do an end run quickly, introduce a prohibition measure, don't let the public know, but 3 days in advance. There was zero text on hand for the public to read. And I'm sure that's a Brown violation. And then they got it right through. I mean, it was astounding. Because it was a 45-day thing, it was only temporary, it could change up the road. They had to do it quickly now because it would be harder to undo once the plants were growing, because it was hard for them to justify something it wouldn't even be an issue for 4 months up the road.
So what you're saying is that the city suddenly rushed in a so-called urgency ordinance, which would be good for 45 days, under the pretext that the ordinance said you can't grow plants in your backyard in the city limits, something like that?
Yes.
Is that right?
The pretext being that this was a public safety and health issue.
Did they present any deaths that had happened from all this backyard growing?
No deaths, and they would comment on it. Well, there isn't a lot so far, but we want to, you know, prevent this. And their standard is to prevent it with prohibition, to go back decades. Mm-hmm. We came away from that in 1996, but the cities, because they're close to one another, and because we've known the county officials and the state officials, but not very well have we known the city officials, and they have another agenda. It is very clear when they don't have the text on hand, and they're rushing urgency ordinances through when they're
in the That's an interesting point for us locally, because I've talked a lot about local violations of the Brown Act, the law that requires public notice, that requires public process, requires public participation, and the right to speak at public meetings, and certainly to read the law that is supposed that is being presented.
Marsha Worth, the Registrar of Voters, got up and said, listen to me. When you have a discussion like this, you must have the ordinance on hand for the public to see the details in it, and to read the details.
So as I understand it, the Ukiah City Council passed an ordinance without making it available to the public.
At the time. They say it was on the Internet. Well, that isn't to the people who were there to look and read the ordinance. You know, what about Section C-1-5, you know? And actually, no, it was being voted on. Most people didn't know.
There was no copy of the ordinance in the city council chambers for the public to read. Now, that's the basis. No one's tried to do a lawsuit to say this.
No, we don't even know. We've asked who can find this research for us. I think it's the basis for a revote. They claim having it available on the Internet and in their office, which was closed, by the way, and in the police department, I guess, and some other place, nowhere near, you know, the stack they usually provide. Sometimes they even provide a packet of various.
And what was the vote at City Council on this ordinance?
That was May 4th and the 45 days in.
What was the vote?
June 18th.
No, what was the vote?
Unanimous, 5-0. They didn't even seem to mind that they could be sued for these violations of Prop 215.
How long did they talk about it at City Council before it was passed?
Well, I mean, they listened to us for maybe an hour and a half. We could only speak 3 minutes. We all think that we were shorted a minute, each of us.
Uh-huh.
The patient's union was given 5 minutes, so we probably got 4, any of us.
How many people spoke in favor of this emergency no-smell please ordinance?
Uh-huh. Well, you know, the first one, which was recorded in a local newspaper, was 14-2.
14.
For not implementing any of this, basically, just taking a look again, and 2 in favor of keeping the ordinance. Now, this passed, the city council that actually passed it, they're much less interested in anything in life that's going on than the planning commission. It was that lopsided, you know, maybe, you know, 10-4 perhaps. But all of them, that's 5 of them, they couldn't care less about the legal implications. They don't have any idea what's going on.
So now, what group we're talking about, the city council or the planning?
City council.
Right.
Because there's someone who knows exactly what he's doing, who's leading the prohibition charge. That is Councilman McGowan. It's his first year as a city councilman, and he's representing the forces that lost the 1996 election.
Now, has there been a sort of a liberal government on this issue in the last 10 years prior to this vote, or has it been...
Certainly in the county.
Uh-huh. What about at the city level?
No, there hasn't been, there have not been issues in the city. This is just the first attempt to use zoning ordinance regulation.
Well, what's the practice been in Ukiah as far as outdoor yards, marijuana growths?
They've been just growing wild everywhere. Some people tell me they're 3/4 of the neighborhood is growing.
So have the police, after this ordinance was passed, moved in with their scythes?
I don't think so, because there are barely starts and small. small clones in place. You know, it was, the urgency is just an another irrational hiccup.
Right, so what I'm saying is the police haven't, I mean, the ordinance hasn't been taken seriously by the police department either.
I can't imagine. I mean, they want it in place, though. They're serious about that.
But they haven't, you heard of, haven't heard of any enforcement
Nothing.
Operation. Cause that's
However, there are several prosecutions in the county going on.
Uh-huh.
I mean, unexpected prosecutions that have been pretty much without over the last couple of years. While we, you know, were building this, these good relations, getting these new guidelines. Now the cities are apparently flying over and seeing a whole lot of gardens. And I know of three prelims coming up in the next week or two. Two of them on June 15th are going to be in court.
And
one of them was the 44-pounder that were vouched for by the Alameda County people going through Mendocino, you know, or from Mendocino.
You mean a garden that had 44 pounds of marijuana?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Based in Alameda.
And this is for medical marijuana, right?
Yes, and vouched for by the Alameda city county officials. And, you know, it's very, very tight support over there for just that one, that those two people. Another one was 192 plants for five people. In other words, one patient who was also growing for four others.
Is it hard up there for poor people to get medical marijuana? I mean, is it very expensive? Is it...
And it's almost, this is the problem with prohibition. It cuts off access. The only access is through the right to grow for the majority of people. There's no dispensaries in Fort Bragg. That shows you how much access there is that way.
Uh-huh. How about Ukiah?
Well, there are three, I guess. Two have been around for years, and one more has just gotten a permit to open. So it isn't a huge number. And while they're prohibiting backyard growing, and which is prohibited until June 18th, unless we roll that back right now.
Mm-hmm.
And people can be visited and so on. I mean, the start of fear and privacy violations being the norm is about to begin if this goes through.
Well,
and, you know, we're calling on people.
Well, it's already gone through, right? It was passed in early May.
Yeah, but it's a temporary ordinance that doesn't mean anything. We aren't even sure that we can enjoin it until it becomes a permanent ordinance.
Oh, I see what you mean. In other words, the 45 days would start... Well, actually, if it was an urgency ordinance, the 45 days started when it was passed.
And ends June 15th, because the 18th, that would be the final meeting before the 18th.
So on the 18th, the ordinance goes out, and I guess they'll try to pass a permanent ordinance?
Well, or, listen to this, another temporary ordinance so that we can't enjoin that either. And we would have to file our own civil suit.
You can enjoin a civil, you know, an urgency ordinance.
Maybe you can join an urgency, but maybe not a temporary urgency ordinance.
I would. Yeah, interesting. I mean, I'd have to look up the law. Maybe you have. It sounds.
Well, no, we're. Yeah. We don't know. The lawyers don't know.
We're talking with Pebbles Trippett of the Medical Marijuana Patients Union up in Mendocino County. Pebbles is going to be on, I hope, on Sunday when we come back
indeed.
At 10 in the morning. We're going to talk more about the history of the Medical Marijuana Patients Union, some of your long-term objectives, some of your history. And who knows? I guess Angel versus Rach will probably, I mean, Angel and Rach versus Ashcroft, really, won't be decided. It would have come out on Tuesday. We're already at Thursday. So next Tuesday is the next opportunity for the Supreme Court to eliminate civil liberties for all of us.
We have so much in the state that, you know, they're going to do selective things to exercise their muscle.
Right. Well,
it's not going to erase all of this positive progress in the state.
Oh, no.
Neither are the cities erasing it.
Right. Right.
I mean, we're on, this is a defensive posture. This is, welcome to our world is what I have to say. We were on the defensive for so long, so many decades, going all the way back to 1972, I believe, when the Normal versus Gain initiative, a court case tried to win on the basis of privacy and didn't. Going back that far, we haven't had serious, you know, challenges going either to higher until the Rach decision and, of course, till the Maurer decision with the California Supreme Court on our side. Well, the California Supreme Court is aligned with patients, and the Ninth Circuit on the Raich decision, which stands to this day, and the Wham decision that stands to this day in the Ninth Circuit. That's the U.S. The only one who might not rule with us is the U.S. Supreme Court. But I have always contended that we have a better chance than not under the Commerce Clause.
And we'll talk about that on Sunday.
Okay.
And maybe,
as you wish.
And maybe talk about it more, actually, when clowns come down with their decision.
Okay. Sounds good.
Hey, Pebbles, appreciate your, you know, being available today, and let's talk again soon.
Absolutely.
In 3 days, and we'll get back to this.
Thankful for the dynamism.
Hey, and email me if you can what you've been writing, and I'll try to post it.
Thank you. I will do that. I'll take you right up on it.
Sounds good.
Okay. Take good care.
Hey, bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Pebbles Trippett up in, Elk on the coast, up there near Albion. Boy, those little cities I'm not too familiar with, but that's where she's living. This is Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. Here's a little more of Mama Cass.
Come along, everybody, come along. We're gonna hold down tonight.
Well, I work all day from morning till night, plowing them fields of corn. Come Saturday night, I head in the town, get me a girl on my arm.
Come along, everybody, come along. We're gonna hold down tonight.
And more from the Big Three and Mama Cass for all you old folk song fanatics of the early 60s. Coming up next, you can hear lots of old 60s stuff. It'll probably be old 60s stuff from Uncle Dennis. Cream to the Dregs coming up at 8. Looking at today's Sentinel, or Sentinel, as they call themselves, Santa Cruz Sentinel, one of the headlines by Shana McCord is, city may take land downtown, developer can't close deal with owner of lot on North Pacific Avenue. And it's about old Ron Lau. You may remember the environmentally sensitive property owner who's been on the air talking about the city's scheme to eminent domain his property, which is where the old bookshop Santa Cruz used to be. You may remember, some of you old-timers. It's next to Lulu Carpenter's, across from the post office now. Sort of a big hole in the ground at the moment, along with the Rittenhouse hole, and I guess Randall Kane's got undeveloped property. And this is a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday. It's not a regular council meeting, but it will be an evening council meeting at 7, if Ron Lau tells us true. At least that's what he told us last time he was on the air. I'm going to try to get his reaction to this story, which doesn't talk about his having filed a plan with the Planning Commission and is preparing to come in with a substantive plan. Maybe Shana McCord hasn't talked to him. Actually, I guess she has talked to him. She's called the Redevelopment Agency. This is Shana, the Sentinel reporter. Lau failed to respond to the Redevelopment Agency's April 20th offer for $1.6 million, said the agency's Marty Ackerman. It's a blighted piece of property located on the key blocks of Pacific Avenue, said Marty of the Redevelopment Agency. Lau's property is a concrete pit between Lulu Carpenter's Cafe and World Savings Bank on the north end of Pacific Avenue. He's vowed to fight attempts. I'm not interested in selling it. He told the Sentinel in February. He could not be reached to comment on Wednesday. So maybe we can get some more comments. Maybe I can encourage him to talk to Shana McCord and get something in the Sentinel about how he really wants to develop the property in a fashion that at least he feels would be an improvement on what the city's developers are planning. We kind of talked about it a little bit. I'm sympathetic to Ron, if he can get his stuff together, and he's seemed to indicate when we last spoke that he had. I haven't seen all the documentation, and I guess that will be coming up at City Council on Tuesday. Maybe we'll be talking about that more on Sunday when I come back, and we'll see if that goes down. If you want to call in and you wish to talk about anything before we end the show, which is going to be very soon, now's the time, 427-3772, place to call. And a couple of quick announcements tonight, in about 10 minutes, the Santa Cruz Gorilla Drive-In is going to be rolling the flick under the Soquel Avenue Bridge. Special event. Who knows? Maybe I'll check it out. Night of the Iguana. Night of the Iguana is John Huston's masterpiece adaptation of the Tennessee Williams play. A defrocked priest who's lost his faith, a lustful widow, a lonely middle-aged woman, a beautiful and sexual 17-year-old, a poet on the verge of death, and a gorgeous Mexican coastal paradise. And there's also going to be Reverend Billy and the Stop Shopping Gospel Choir, who will bring their own special entertaining blend of spirituality and activism. That's going to be happening tonight at 8 o'clock, wow, in 8 minutes. So hustle down to the Soquel Avenue Bridge. Right there under the bridge, you'll be able to check out the movies, bring some popcorn of your own or whatever you want to bring with you, and see what you think. What else is happening here? Of course, Rock for Peace, I mentioned, is happening tomorrow night. That's at 7 p.m. at the Vets Hall. That's a youth event, which I mentioned earlier. Then at Saturday at noon, there's a counter-recruitment event down in Watsonville, 12 to 5 in the afternoon. Come eat and be a part of a community-led resistance to the discriminatory policies of military recruiters who target communities of color and the poor. Our goals include creating regional ties among youth, raising awareness about military alternatives, learning about successful actions, sharing ideas for resisting war. Snack food, quality meats, and barbecue will be eaten. Uh-oh, watch out, you veggies. So show up on time and bring your friends. And it's, if you're interested in more information, counterrecruitment@yahoo.com, sponsored by UCSC Students Against War, Watsonville Brown Berets, Harbor High School Students for Peace and Justice, and the Resource Center for Nonviolence. So that's noon to 5, Ramsey Park, Watsonville, barbecue against the war, so to speak, or at least kick recruiters out of our schools. Well, I think we're going to kind of wind it down. Let me see if there's anything else I wish to quickly slip in before that the bell rings, so to speak. And let's see what we got here. We covered a lot of this. Some of it we haven't. I think that pretty much does it for. I actually was going to do another update from Spokane. Hopefully, I'll be able to do that on Sunday, and maybe even get you some interview time. Spokane is planning a 10th city. Not a brief tent university to chatter about this and that, or to discuss this and that, but an ongoing Dignity Village style encampment, such as they have in Portland, Oregon, to dramatize not only the situation for homeless people, but to actually provide them with an alternative, and to shame the city and the police and the care providers who aren't care providing, as well as to empower homeless people themselves. We'll be talking about that. Well, let's go out on some more of Mama Cass. And come on back on Sunday at 9:30 if you'd like, and we'll be doing more of this kind of scattergunned approach to different issues, although there's a sort of a common thread here. We're talking about civil rights for poor people generally, And I'm trying to focus on local issues. When I talk with other communities, I try to relate them and how they're dealing with their problems to how we're not dealing with our problems here in Santa Cruz. So come on back. In the meantime, give a call off air if you'd like to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's my number. If you got information, you want to report concerns from the streets, you're looking for street newspaper or street spirit, actually the number to call for that is Becky Johnson. She's at 479-9291. Or check out the Homeless Service Center. The new issue of Street Spirit might be out tomorrow, and there will be an article about Arcata in that Street Spirit, which I've written. So dash out and check it out. Or you can go onto the Huff website, where it should be appearing soon, and read it there. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Come again.
Tony, he saw Delia with another guy. Tony took his 44 and went to ask her why. Now she's gone. Delia is gone. Delia's gone. One more round. Tony, he was jealous, knew she was untrue. Delia said, I went out late just to look for you. Now she's gone, 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 gone. Delia is gone, Delia's gone. One more round. Tony, he shot Delia, 'cause he knew she lied. First time he shot her, she's gone. Delia is gone. Delia's gone. One more round.
Delia, oh Delia, where you been so long? Everybody's talking about how Delia up and
now she's gone, 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 gone. Delia is gone, Delia's gone, 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 gone. One more round. Now she's gone, 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 gone. Delia is gone, Delia's gone, 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 gone.
Summertime, peaches in the fall. I don't find that girl love, I won't have none at all.
Going to Rocky Island, gone. When I'm gone, see my candy darling, oh, hey, oh.
Black clouds are rising, sure sign of rain. Get your red body, but clear your lines of day.
High on a hill, got a batch of cone mesh dripping from my skill.
Oh,
my rider's gonna miss me when I'm gone. I know my rider's gonna miss me when I'm gone. I know she's gonna miss me from rolling in her arms.
Well, did you ever wake up and find your rider gone? Well, did you ever wake up and find your rider gone? Well, put you on a wonder and wish you'd never been born.
Sun's gonna shine in my back door someday. Sun's gonna shine in my back door someday.
Built your fire, you know I cut your love. I built your fire, and you know I cut your love. I'll be a loving baby, but I ain't gonna be your dog.
Well, the dawn's coming early, night's gonna fade away. As the dawn's coming early, night's gonna fade away. If I see your rider coming, baby, stop the break of day. I know my rider's gonna miss me when I'm gone. I know my rider's gonna miss me when I'm gone. I know she's gonna miss me from rolling in her arms. I know.
Mother selling that crack baby for puff on that pipe got me to thinking about the world situation, a total sick degeneracy this world's in, chaos, the total declension of the world.
Oh, you got that right, Lester. I don't think people appreciate what we go through on a day-to-day basis. I mean, we see the murders, the jungle, the rapists, the sodomists of the elderly, the satanic animal sacrificers, the drive-by rap music, and every other degenerate piece of junk no one else has the guts or honesty to deal with.
Right.
Sit back here, and after a call like that, it's just like society's blaming the zookeepers for the mess the animals live in.
You say there, Jimbo, it just occurred to me, and I hope you don't take offense at this comment, but, you know, I think cops are the only real people left.
Take care of that, too.
Nothing but a rain.
And you're tuned to Freak Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. My name's Uncle Dennis, and it's time for From the Cream to the Dregs. And tonight we start with a couple of old masters from way back. You know these guys, I'm sure. First one's called B.B. King, and the second one's called Eric Clapton.
Cause you haven't done nothing, baby, but drove a good man.
When the moon peeks over the mountain, little girl, I'll be on my way. I'm gonna roam the highway until I break.
Oh, you're cute.